We call this meeting to order, the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors for October 28, 2014. Please rise to salute to our nation's flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will begin our meeting this morning with a presentation from the Children and Families Commission for their 2013-14 activities. Morning, Mary Ann.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, Supervisors, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. I'm Mary Ann Lee. I'm the Health Services Agency Director, but this morning I'm before you as this year's Chairman of the Children and Families Commission. And it's the time of year that we come and we give an update to you on the activities and achievements of the commission. So you're going to hear a little bit from me and a lot more from the Executive Director, John Sims, as we run through some information we've put together for you. So we'll start just with with the mission. It's about promoting the development and well-being of children age 0 through 5 in Stanislaus County. And just a little bit of an overview background about the commission. It was established due to a proposition passed in 1998. And it's funded through a tax on tobacco products. And since the purpose of the commission, our focus is about young children 0 to 5, the funding is allocated to the counties based on live births by county. We are governed by a 9-member board, members that are appointed by your board, and we're charged with improving the health and well-being of children age 0 through 5. While the funding is still strong, it is a little bit of a declining revenue source, in part because of a declining birth rate, and also because of fewer smokers, so that's a good thing. A little bit about the membership. You can see there it's 5 members from the community and 4 members that serve in positions for the county. And if I could, there are several in the room, so can I ask the commissioners that were able to make it today to stand up? We have Vicki Bauman, David Cooper, Denise Hunt, Nellie Paredes-Wellborn, George Skull, Supervisor Chiesa, myself, Madeline, and Dr. John Walker, our public health officer. Okay, with that, I'm gonna turn the real meaningful part of the presentation to John Sims, the executive director.
Good morning. The commission can't do its work without a number of community partners, and as you see this list here, we partner with a wide variety of people and private nonprofit organizations throughout the county. I would draw your attention especially to the top of the right-hand column. We have some partnerships with Stanislaus County, with DHRS, CSA, and HSA. We have a number of those partners here today. This work could not be done without them, and I would like the partners of the commission to stand up at the present time and be recognized. Thank you for being here today. We certainly appreciate it. We very much appreciate the work you do. Thank you. One of the goals of the commission is to provide services countywide to the 0 to 5 population. And you see on this list, on the left-hand column, you see our community-focused or community-based programs. And on the right-hand side of this page, you see the countywide services that are provided. Many of these countywide services are provided at those community-based locations and sites. And you see things in the community like family resource center services, healthy birth outcomes, and healthy starts. There is a graphic representation by a map of the county of where these are located. And it's hard to read, but it simply gives you an idea that these services are provided throughout the county. You see us on the west side, down the central corridor, and on the east side as well. One unanticipated outcome of having this service delivery system is that it has created a platform by which other organizations can use to provide their services in the community as well. And we see other county departments, as well as schools and foundations, grants, all being provided through these particular sites. We thought it would be worthwhile to give you a little information about how Stanislaus County compares to the state of California when you're looking at the 0 to 5 population. If you look at the population, you see that we have percentage-wise more 0 to 5 here in Stanislaus County than the state. When you're looking at the poverty level, you see we have more 0 to 5 with higher poverty percentage than you do with the state of California. And the infant mortality rate is higher in Stanislaus than the state average. Now, there is good news on this slide. That infant mortality rate as recently as 2006 was 7.3 per thousand. That infant mortality rate has been going down over time, and in part because of the programs and the work being done by our partners here in the community. A goal of the commission is to strengthen families. It is a tenet of ours that stable, healthy environments for 0 to 5 families are needed. And so this chart is a pie chart showing the number of participants and the types of participants we served in the 13-14 fiscal year. You'll notice that over 29,000 participants were served. A third of those participants were children 0 to 5. Over half of the participants were parents and guardians. The other family members constitute other family members. Could be kids outside of the 0 to 5 range, but those older individuals, if they have mental health issues or health issues, do impact the development, the learning, the progress of those 0 to 5 children, and so their needs are addressed as well. And then finally, providers. Those are teachers and child care providers that have received specialized training from the commissioner's partners or participate in conferences. One thing we like to look at on a regular basis is look at the race and ethnicity of the participants compared to the community makeup. And as you can see, ethnicity and race in terms of who's provided services and the makeup of the community tend to pretty much mirror each other as you look at these charts. The next one is primary language of participants. And again, you see in Stanislaus County the same pattern, that the participants served tend to reflect the community makeup. As we look at the budget for 13-14, you'll see that the highest priorities of the commission are family functioning and health. And you see 82% of the budget that was adopted being allocated in those two areas. Again, for services such as family resource centers, 0-5 early intervention through behavioral health and recovery services, healthy birth outcomes, healthy cubs, a health program. You see 9% of the budget went for other programs, and that's basically our trainings and conferences, but the largest share of that is a contingency that's set aside by the commission in the event there are unanticipated expenses throughout the year. The remaining slices of that budget pie, none of those slices exceed 5%, but they are slices such as administrative costs, child development expenses, evaluation costs, and promoting systems of care. Now, in the past decade, when you look at the budgets that have been adopted by the commission, it's best to read this chart from the bottom to the top, because 10 years ago is at the bottom and the 13-14 year is at the top. And you'll see this is representing $107 million that was budgeted by the commission in the last 10 years. On average, 92% of those budgets were spent on services for 0 to 5 in the community. You do see a trend of a decreasing budget, and as Marianne Lee referenced earlier, that's because we have a declining revenue source, the number of smokers are decreasing, and smokers are finding a way to avoid paying the tobacco tax by either ordering online or even purchasing cigarettes on Indian reservations. Also in the last decade, the strategic plans adopted by the commission have had a purposeful and organized way of spending down their reserves so that they can maintain support for their highest priority programs. And you see on this chart the actual use of the fund balance or reserve by the commission in the last decade. These numbers on this chart total $12 million. At one time, the commission had a reserve of $24 million. So as of June 30th, we're just over $11 million reserve right now. And the strategic plan calls for a continued spend down of that reserve until we hit the floor established by the commission, which is going to be one half of our annual revenue stream. So we expect over the next 5 to 6 years or so that we'll spend down that reserve and reach a $2 to $3 million reserve, at which point I call it hitting equilibrium, where we'll simply be spending what we're taking in each year. Now, in terms of what was accomplished with that money, we have a few highlights we'd like to go over with you. In the area of supporting families, the parents of almost 9,000 children received family support services. Over 2,100 children received more intensive services that reduced their child abuse risk factors. And the parents of over 2,500 children have increased their parenting skills. In the areas of safeguarding children's health, 418 children, 0 to 5, and pregnant women were served by an interim health care program. 363 women who were pregnant and children 0 to 5 are now enrolled in health insurance coverage. And 210 at-risk infants were born healthy. 90% of 230 pregnant mothers who participated in the Healthy Birth Program initiated breastfeeding. In terms of early childhood education, over 1,000 families increased the time they spent reading with their children at home. 127 children participated in a kindergarten readiness program, and over 1,300 children were screened for educational development issues, and then 252 of those were referred for either additional assessments or for intervention services. As we look at supportive systems, what's been accomplished is over 5,900 children in families have increased their knowledge and utilization of community resources. The Prop 10 programs that we work with brought in more than $3 million from state and federal sources to be able to augment the services and programs offered to children and families here in Stanislaus County. And finally, Prop 10 programs collaborated with four or more other programs to be able to reduce duplication and increase the efficiency and effectiveness of their services. Now, for the last 10 years, the Commission has issued a report to the community, and this is a copy of the cover page of this year's report. We have traditionally used this board presentation as a kickoff for that report distribution, and we have placed that report at your seats today. The report will be included in all newspapers in the community starting as early as Friday on October 31st. That's when you should see it in the Modesto, be in the Modesto area. On November 5th, it will be on the east side in the Oakdale Riverbank and Turlock areas, and then on the 6th, you should see it on the west side in the Patterson area. So in that 1 week period, we plan to distribute this to every newspaper in the community. Now, Marianne Lee and I are here to answer any questions you might have about the commission or its activities for 13-14. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the board? Supervisor Kiesa.
Comments. First of all, thank you very much, John. Marianne, I appreciate all you have done. I can tell you serving on this commission is a simple task with Tina and Erica and Stephanie and John that keep us very organized. I especially want to thank the board members, especially the community members, Nellie, Dave. Denise is now a community member. She used to be with the county. Vicki is, you're not a community member, right, Vicki? You're through the schools. But George Skoll is, because these people give of their time. Again, this is a unpaid gig, as you would expect. Give of their time to make this community a better place. And we talk about building community capacity. It takes folks that are willing to step up and really take the bull by the horns. So I do appreciate that. And then our staff, Madeline and Dr. Walker, who's the only one that's not here, actually, and Marianne and myself, we're, of course, paid to be there, right? So it's not the same thing. So I want to thank you. I think it's important, John had said some really important things about concentrating. All evidence points to early intervention and prevention at this earlier population. We'll have something later on that we're going to be talking about as an item about that. And the work that all you folks are doing, I know you received some money, but bringing in an extra $3 million to do the things you do, the outcomes. John had told a story, and I can't tell it exactly right, but there was a shaken baby problem years ago. We had put some effort into it. John knew someone who had had a child, right, at the hospital, and he asked them, you know, how the process was, what kind of education material, and they were just inundated with material about how to care for their babies properly. And really, that's what it's about. We're taking the risk population, the people that potentially have a problem, and we're concentrating our efforts on those folks. And Dr. Walker tells me something, the single greatest indicator of a child's health at birth is the educational attainment level of the mother. And that again speaks to why we need to help some folks out, because they're not there. So again, Nellie and the community members, and Dave and Denise and George, and hopefully I'm not forgetting, thank you very much. Again, I think we're doing great work. This is just like jail and probation. We hope someday to put them out of business, right? We hope that we don't have any issues and that there's not a Prop 10 commission, because we've taken care of all our problems. Thank you.
Any other comments from the board? I see none. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah, our second presentation is the Transportation Development Act and Unmet Transit Needs.
Good morning.
Good
morning, Chair, Supervisors. My name is Regina Valentine, and I'm with the Santa South Council of Governments. I want to thank you for allowing me to present to you about the Transportation Development Act and the Unmet Transit Needs Process. Okay, so who is Santa South Council of Governments? Well, as most of you know, since you're on our board, we are the Joint Powers Authority composed of representatives for each city and the County of Santa South. I'd like to recognize the board members who serve on our policy board representing Santa South County. We serve as the Metropolitan Planning Organization and Regional Transportation Planning Agency for the Santa South County region. So STANCOG is responsible for addressing transportation-related issues related to highways, streets and roads, air, rail, bicycles, pedestrians, and public transit. So speaking of public transit, STANCOG administers the Transportation Development Act, which has two funding sources. There's the Local Transportation Fund, which is derived from a quarter-cent sales tax statewide. Our portion last fiscal year was over $19 million. And then there's the State Transit Assistance Fund, which is derived from a sales tax on gas and diesel, and our portion last fiscal year was around $3 million. So what is the unmet transit needs process? Well, STANCOG each year must identify and resolve any unmet transit need issues that before local transportation funds can be used for other purposes. The terms unmet transit need and reasonable to meet are defined by STANCOG and reviewed every 5 years, and STANCOG is required to conduct at least one public hearing a year and prepare an unmet transit needs identification analysis report. So we have begun the unmet transit needs assessment process, and we will be holding public hearings to receive comments about potential unmet transit needs. There will be three that we'll be holding this year. Next, potential unmet transit needs are analyzed according to the STANCOG's adopted definitions. The analysis report will be prepared identifying potential unmet transit needs. And lastly, any unmet transit needs determined to be reasonable to meet must be funded before local transportation funds are distributed for other purposes. So what exactly is the definition of an unmet transit need and what is reasonable to meet? As you can see, there's a checklist, and I apologize for the size of the text, but in summary, unmet transit needs cannot duplicate existing services, and for an unmet transit need to be considered reasonable to meet and must achieve performance standards both individually and system-wide, cannot require an agency to spend more local transportation funds than is available to the jurisdiction for transit, and cannot reduce funds needed by a jurisdiction to run public transit services unless approved by the Standing Code Policy Board. So I'm here today to announce our three public hearings. The first will be at the Standing Code Policy Board meeting on November 19th at 6 p.m. And then the second will be held in Oakdale at the Gladys Lemon Senior Center on December 15th at 6 p.m. And the third will be in Patterson at the Hammond Senior Center on January 5th or 15th at 6 p.m. We'll have a Spanish interpreter available at all three hearings, and flyers have been posted on the start buses promoting the hearings. And actually, I believe we also passed out here, the flyers for you guys as well. So in closing, I can answer questions you may have, and you're welcome to contact me if you feel there are any unmet transit needs we need to consider this year. I appreciate you allowing me time to speak today.
Okay. Any questions from the board? Any comments? Okay, seeing none, thank you for your presentation. Okay, this is the time in our meeting where we have a public comment on items that are not on today's agenda. If you have an item you'd like to talk about that is on the agenda, you'll have to wait till that item comes up. We allow 10 minutes for public comment. I have two speaker cards.
5 minutes.
For 5 minutes, okay. I guess I was overly generous today. Okay, I have two speaker cards today. Keith Griffith. Hope I pronounce your name properly there.
Thank you, Mr. Valentini, and members of the board. Mr. Chisilla's recent comments were very meaningful to me as a person. Most of you know me from my time with the Alliance. I was a staff member. Maybe you might have remembered you all got a copy of this book that I published about 3 years ago. I got lit off by the Alliance 2 years ago, and since leaving the Alliance, I've taken my original idea, and to Mr. Chisilla's comment, we need to help some people in this county. And what I do is I help people by teaching them to fish, in the biblical sense. If I give you a fish today, you'll eat. But if I teach you how to fish, you'll eat for a lifetime. And there are two elected individuals in this room today who have been essential in mentoring me as well as helping me succeed in my new career. So today I brought a couple of copies of my book to say thank you to two individuals. The first individual has been my mentor for many years, and that is Senator Dick Monteith, who is a member of the Board of Supervisors. And I was hoping he would write a poem from my book, The Baby Boomer Survival Manual. But unfortunately, we didn't have any in the book, but Dick, this is for you.
Oh, thank you.
And the second individual is Sheriff Adam Christensen, and he and his staff were essentially helping me put together a book called Doing Life Outside, and this is a book for ex-offenders written in the voice of convicts. It's a baseball bat to the side of the head, but it teaches all the essential job skills an ex-offender needs to get a job in today's marketplace. So, Sheriff Christensen?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you again. I have a third book, by the way, for the general public, The 99%. I'd love to talk to you about some other time. Perhaps I can get on as an agenda item. This might be something you might be looking for your Workforce Investment Board, since I know three of you sit on the board still. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you for your comments. Hey, Vernon Lee Price.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, gentlemen of the board, Mr. CEO, Madam Clerk, ladies and gentlemen of Stennis Falls County. My name is Vernon Price. I'm a homeless advocate. I'll be speaking this morning on some, in a continuation of yesterday's meeting that I'd like to thank the chairman for, with another homeless person and myself. Thank you so much for the considered time. This is to your honorable chairman and council members, board members. This is for recommendation for consideration. The recommendation, adopt a resolution urging the California legislation to adopt the California Homeless Bill of Rights, which among various things establish that one person should not suffer unfair discrimination based upon their homeless status. Background, being homeless in California does not deny a person basic rights, access to necessary services, excuse me, or fair treatment in the workplace or polling place. The Homeless Bill of Rights will guarantee that no person's rights, privileges, or access to public services will be denied or abridged solely because he or she is homeless. Late June 2012, the state of Rhode Island passed a first of its kind Homeless Bill of Rights. The California legislation passed a much-needed Homeowner's Bill of Rights in 2012. The next logical step is to ensure the rights of those without a home. The financial implications of this is none, just simple consideration. I would be the contact person, so you all have my email address, and you, Mr. Chairman, do have some attachments that was given to you yesterday. The text of the California Homeless Bill of Rights, Rhode Island Homeless Bill of Rights, under the U.S. model, under the Huffington Post, and also the Governor Chaffee signs the First Nations Home of Providence Journal. I'd also like to invite each and every one here this morning on the board and in the county. There will be a Homeless Bill of Rights march on November 19th. We will be communicating at 6:30, and the parade will start at the Gospel Rescue Mission, and it will end here at 1010 10th Street. We also have some speakers coming in from San Francisco and from Los Angeles to speak at this event following the march. That has been Mary August, approved by her at the Modesto Center Plaza, 1000 L Street. Her contact number is 577-6485. I believe the Board of Supervisors received an email with my CC this yesterday evening. If not, you know, we'll be receiving that by the 14th. Thank you so much for your time, your consideration. If there's any questions or concerns, I'll be glad to answer those. If not, thank you so much, and y'all have a very pleasant day.
Those are the only two speaker cards I have. Is there anybody else from the audience who wishes to address this board on a non-agenda item? Okay, seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar. Is any member of this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar for a separate vote?
Mr. Chairman, item A2, separate vote.
And Chairman, we would request that item A3B be pulled and brought back at a later date. A3B.
Oh, I see. Okay. But A3A, you want to continue with? Okay. Okay, is there anybody else who wish to pull an item outside of these two? Anybody from the audience wish to pull a consent agenda item? Okay, seeing none, then I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar except for A2 and A3B.
I will make that motion to approve the consent except for A2 and A3B.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll take it.
Okay, I was going to say, motion almost died for lack of a second. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, motion passes 5-0. We'll now move back to item A2.
Not necessary for a staff report, just a separate vote.
Okay. Okay, sir.
Motion to approve.
Okay, motion's been made to approve. Is there a second?
I will second.
motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion passes 4-1. Okay, we will now move to agenda item B7, approval of the 2014 employee health insurance rates.
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, members of the board, CEO Risen, Council Doring. My name is Jody Hayes from the Chief Executive Office. Joining me this morning at our staff table is Employee Benefits Manager Paul Lohr from the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. We're very pleased to present to you an update on our employee health insurance program. We've been working with our employee health insurance consultants and our employee unions on developing some changes to our employee health insurance program, and we appreciate the opportunity to share the results of that effort with you this morning. We will also be sharing with you some important policy considerations related to health care reform, particularly issues related to provisions of medical benefits for newly eligible part-time employees. We're going to highlight many of the issues that are included in your detailed agenda report. Although our presentation is intended to be a brief overview of the information in your agenda report, we're prepared to discuss any of these details in greater detail with you this morning based on your questions. We have two different topics we're going to be talking about today. The first is our health insurance program changes and rate recommendations. And we'll be talking about the county's medical insurance program throughout the presentation. And as a reminder, our active full-time employees make up about 91% of the participants in the program, with the rest of our participants made up of retirees through the STAN-SARA system, as well as special districts and COBRA participants. We also have approximately 5,200 dependents covered on the county's medical insurance program, for a total approximate lives of about 8,600 individuals. We want to start with a brief background of what we've accomplished and some of the history in the county's medical insurance program. The county participated in a large purchasing consortium called the Pacific Business Group on Health, PBGH, that assisted us in purchasing fully insured medical benefits from 1999 to 2009. We utilized health insurance consultants for purchasing our health insurance program in 2010 and 2011. And through that time, our experience was that we averaged about approximately 11% rate increases from 2005 to 2011. We were also facing an additional 12% increase in 2012 under that prior fully insured plan. We worked with our employee groups to reduce or minimize county costs each year through changes in our medical benefits and increases in our premium cost share. And you can see from this slide here that each year we would do something in the insurance program to try to stem the tide of rate inflation. And even while we were doing all of these things with the increased copays and plan design changes and reductions in benefits and so forth, or the restructuring of the program, we still experienced 11% cost increases, or a total of 77% over that that period of time. I do want to note that our employees have always been strong partners with the county in evaluating the health insurance program. We negotiate one collective joint agreement with all employee groups to maintain one consistent platform for employee benefits. You can see on this slide, this was the 12% increase that we were facing in 2012, which would have resulted in approximately a $5.9 million increase in the total program back to 2012. So this is just the history to tell you where we were at and what we were facing. As a result of that, there was a significant effort undertaken in 2011 in preparation of 2012 to evaluate what we wanted to do to address this ongoing inflation. We worked with our consultants to develop two specific strategies for the program going forward. The first strategy, and it's really kind of the anchor of our new system, was the development of a new nonprofit health plan alternative focused on access to high-quality care with greater long-term financial stability. This is our program we call Stanislaus County Partners in Health. We're very proud of it. Essentially, we formed our own health plan, and we formed it on a nonprofit basis based on local partnerships here in the local community. What we've learned through this effort is that the delivery of health care, although it is certainly influenced at the national level, is really about what you can do locally, and that's what we've been focused on over the last several years. We also prepared a self-insurance model to combine our risk pools and to create more of a long-term financial management of the county's medical insurance program. And when I say long-term, when we do fiscal forecasting, like our budget forecasting for you, we're always talking about 5 years out and so forth. In healthcare, long-term for some people means 2 years, but for us, we're trying to maintain a 3-year vision in our medical insurance program. So we did create a 3-year vision for the plan years 2012, 2013, and 2014, and we're before you today because that vision is coming up to expiration. All of the contracts that we've established with our providers in the local community are expiring at the end of this year, and we need to look at what we're going to do starting next year. We experienced, here's the overall outcome of our efforts over the last several years. We experienced significant savings in 2012 and 2013 compared to the total cost of remaining in a fully insured program. We'll kind of demonstrate that on the next chart. However, we did set our medical premium rates too low in 2012 and 2013, which generated an initial deficit in program funding. So there are two very different stories to tell. One is that we reduce our overall cost. The second is we didn't charge ourselves enough, and we should have charged ourselves more those first 2 years. There's a lot of information related to why that happened, and we've presented that in some of our prior board reports, but I'd be happy to revisit that if you have any questions. I do want to comment that our 2014 rates have corrected the ongoing deficit spending. So in 2014, we're on firm footing. We're actually paying down some of that deficit. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the presentation here. Okay, there's a lot of numbers on this page, but I just wanted to show this to you to highlight that in 2012, our fully insured option would have generated about $52 million in costs. In 2012, we actually spent about $46.5 million, but like I said, we didn't charge ourselves enough. We were about $43 million, generated a $3.5 million deficit. In the 2013 plan year, we did the same thing again, which was reducing our overall costs in comparison to where we would have been. However, we did have that additional deficit materialize. So the combination of the two deficits between 2012 and 2013 equaled $8.9 million, and that's essentially what we should have been charging departments above and beyond what our insurance rates were set at those first 2 years. We, as I mentioned, we did increase our rates for 2014 to pay down this deficit and to more or less right-size the program expenditures. We've been accumulating, or I'm sorry, we're at a place now where we anticipate paying down $3 to $4 million of this deficit by the end of the 2014 plan year. So we're thinking going forward, 2015 and beyond, we should be down to approximately $5 to $6 million in a remaining deficit. And you'll see in our rate recommendations a little bit later on that we've actually increased our rates beyond what would normally be required in an effort to continue to pay down this deficit. We'll actually be aiming for about $2 million, and we'll talk about that. As I mentioned, all of our 3-year contracts under the current health insurance program expire at the end of this year. We work with our county staff and consultants to evaluate our options for another 3 years. And we went out to the community and we were very specific in saying that we wanted to maintain a long-term vision for the health insurance program, and we were interested in any opportunities that may be out there. We did a request for information, or what we call an RFI process. It was a very detailed analysis of the local market and the potential value each partner brings to the county's health insurance program. The county had a distinct advantage in having all of the data associated with our plan utilization and the cost of health care in the local community. Simply put, we knew exactly what we needed to purchase, and we knew how much we have been paying. This was a significant change in the healthcare purchasing model that we have historically worked under when the county was fully insured, and we had previously had a low level of confidence in the value of how our healthcare dollars were being spent. After completing our analysis of the market, we worked extensively with our employee labor groups to evaluate each of the plan options and to discuss various alternatives that would meet our collective goals with our employees. After significant analysis and consideration of all options, our employees voted unanimously to adopt a new medical insurance model that would base health plan enrollment on each individual's residence starting in January 2015. This model provides the most efficient system for delivering health care to our plan participants and recognizes the value of our local partnerships while also addressing the needs of those individuals enrolled in the plan who may live outside of our local service area. So this chart will help describe in general terms how the county currently delivers health care. We have both inside the local service area and outside of the local service area. This is not the scale at all, but just wanted to give you some idea of the numbers. As the lowest cost plan, the county's Partners in Health program is by far the largest program of enrollment, with about 80% of our grant participants enrolled in this program. The program maintains its cost advantage by forming strong local partnerships with program discounts that exceed the level of discounts that would otherwise be available to the county in the traditional insurance market. Although this program is designed for local healthcare delivery, the program does have a significant national network of hospitals and healthcare providers throughout the country. You can see from this chart that we have approximately 2,400 employees enrolled in this plan locally and approximately 150 enrolled who live outside of the local Partners in Health service area. So this is representative of just our employee enrollment, and you can see that most of them, the predominant number are local, but we do have employees who live outside of our local service area. The Anthem and Kaiser programs currently make up approximately 20% of the enrolled population and enroll local participants as well as individuals who live outside of the local area. So you can see that those are our three health plans that we currently have available, and you can see in terms of our employee population whether they reside locally or whether they reside outside of the local area. We do have a population of folks outside of the local service area, but it is a small population in comparison to the individuals enrolled in the area. The information available through the RFI process validated that the Partners in Health program was by far the lowest cost plan option in the local marketplace and had a significant network of providers that could service the needs of our local plan participants. The information also demonstrated that the Anthem program has the lowest network outside of the local service area, which is made possible by Anthem's significant presence in the national marketplace and their ability to negotiate more favorable discounts across the country in a way that would not be available to our local Partners in Health program. So to better describe this, for the Partners in Health program that we've generated, our focus is locally, as I mentioned earlier, and that drives value to us as an organization here within the Stanislaus County region. However, we do have individuals that live outside of this region or individuals who have dependents enrolled in the plan or former employees enrolled in the plan outside of this region, and our reach does not extend across the entire country where we would be able to negotiate better discounts than a program like Anthem would be able to negotiate. So therefore, we've clearly identified that when you're living locally, our most valuable program to us is the Partners in Health program. If you live outside of the local area, our most valuable program would be the Anthem Blue Cross program. In recognition of this analysis, our employee groups have opted to utilize a hybrid approach to the healthcare delivery system, with individuals who live locally enrolling in the Partners in Health program and individuals who live outside of the local program enrolling in Anthem. You could tell from the prior slide that individuals would have a choice of where they enrolled in their plans. They could select three different plan options. Going forward, if you live inside of the local service area, you will be required to enroll in the Partners in Health program. If you live outside of the local service area, you'll be required to enroll in the Anthem program. This hybrid approach guarantees the county the most favorable healthcare purchasing strategy based on the needs of our specific population of individuals who participate in this program. This map on the next page is a little rough. It's very hard to see. I wouldn't expect most of you to be able to see all of that, but essentially you can see that's the green is the local service area. That actually looks like a Doppler radar map. It looks like it's going to rain. The drought is over. So you can see that the Partners in Health program covers essentially Stanislaus County and then its reach up into the foothills as the local service area with provider relationships that extend into all of those green areas. We do have coverage outside of those green areas, so if you're outside of the area and so forth, you can still see a doctor, you can still access a hospital, but it's just under a different contracting platform, which does not generate the same level of savings that we would see within the green area. So those individuals, and for those who have a difficulty reading that from the audience or if you're watching, that basically our service area goes up into Manteca and just south of Turlock and then up into the foothills.
Jody?
Yes.
Why the wide areas? White spots within the green?
Because we do this by zip code, and there may be a zip code issue there. Those little teeny white spots up in the foothills, I couldn't tell you. Maybe an error in the Doppler, I don't know. I'm sorry. So what are the overall impacts of this new agreement? The first impact would be our rate stabilization for the 2015 plan year and forward. Our overall medical program cost decrease is estimated at $4.1 million in net savings for the base cost of the medical insurance program. Our recommended rates include an additional 4% increase to generate approximately $2 million in surplus funds to address a portion of the accumulated deficit. So what this is telling us is that overall, this change in our medical insurance program by itself would have a positive impact of about $4.1 million in net savings going forward next year. However, we are recommending that we increase our rates by 4% above and beyond what they would otherwise have to be, because we know we will have a remaining deficit of between $5 to $6 million as we enter next year. And to do that, we would put us on a schedule to completely pay off that deficit no later than the end of the 2017 program year, which is our goal. We're actually hopeful that we'll get it paid off prior to that, but we want to make sure it does not extend beyond the 2017 plan year. The other overall impact that I need to mention is that we have limited medical plan choices for 2015 through 2017. As I previously mentioned, the employees could select several different plan alternatives, and now they will only have one plan to enroll in. And this creates significant challenges for individuals who may have formed a provider relationship with their doctor that could be interrupted through this process because they no longer have access to a particular medical network. We have negotiated an employee premium reimbursement program with our employees. So we do have a window for those individuals who want to maintain that physician relationship. They can actually go outside of the county's program, purchase their own insurance either through the healthcare exchange or privately on the market to maintain relationships with their existing providers, and that the county will reimburse a portion of their healthcare costs. That portion will not exceed 75% of what we otherwise would have spent for the healthcare had they stayed in the county system. So it works for the employees who are in those unique situations, and from a cost perspective, it will work for the county as well. One thing I do want to mention is that going forward, we should experience standard inflationary rate increases in our medical insurance program. The program has performed very well from an overall cost perspective, but it is important to remind ourselves that we cannot defeat healthcare inflation. There will be inflation in the healthcare marketplace. Even our own contracts locally will have some inflationary indicators built into them, but they are relatively minor in comparison to what you see not just in our region but nationally as well. I want to take a moment to mention our dental and vision programs, because those rate recommendations are also before you this morning. The dental program, just a quick summary, the plan is performing well financially. We had prior savings in the self-insured program that allowed us a 10% rate reduction to remain in place in 2012 and 2013. The 2015 recommended rates maintain our 10% rate reduction. So the program is performing well, and we see no increase in dental rates. We do, however, have a new buy-up dental option that is introduced for 2015 with a higher level of benefits, which include an increased annual maximum and a new orthodontic benefit option for dependent children. This new buy-up program will be funded by those individuals who enroll in the program. So it's very important everybody understand our core dental program that is performing well financially will not be impacted by the buy-up program. We will rate that program. I believe we have about a 39% cost difference between those two programs. And those individual employees who want to spend more on their dental care have the option of enrolling in that increased program. I also just want to take a moment to mention our vision program, because this is actually one of the more significant rate impacts in 2015. Our prior savings in the vision and then self-insured program was significant for vision. We had quite a bit of savings that we needed to spend down in that program. So for the last 2 years, we've actually reduced our vision rates by 50% in order to use our savings. That savings has been utilized as planned. And so for 2015, we need to restore our rates to that base level of funding. We've also added a 5% trend increase, just like health insurance. Costs do materialize over time, even in the vision marketplace, so there's about a 5% increase for trend there. This actually represents one of the more significant impacts, is that we have to restore our vision rates back to what they have historically been. The overall fiscal impact of the agreement is that county department costs are driven by the lowest cost plan, and so that increasing our rates by 4% in an effort to pay down that deficit will result in a net overall increase of about 1% in total costs for health insurance for our county departments. County departments were encouraged to budget between 8 to 10% in potential cost increases, so we're very confident that they will have the funding available. There may be some unique situations in some general fund departments where that 1% may not have been factored in, we would expect departments to have the appropriations to afford this at its implementation in January. If we do have any challenges related to health insurance costs, we would report back to you in our third quarter budget report. I also want to mention that participant costs, employees, retirees, et cetera, their costs are actually going to decrease in this model. and it's difficult to explain why the county costs are increasing and employee costs are decreasing. Employee costs are going to decrease because we no longer give them the options of enrolling in higher cost plan alternatives. Currently, employees enroll in plans that cost significantly more than the base plan, and they pay those costs out of pocket. Some of employees are paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars each month in order to afford those higher cost plans. Those plans will not be an option going forward, so that is reflected as an overall cost decrease to our employee population or other plan participants. I do want to mention that on the vision rate, the 1% in total cost increases, over half of that is actually just related to us restoring our vision program and the rates that are available in the base program as a result of us spending our savings. That completes the portion of our healthcare rate presentation. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Paul to address the impacts of the Affordable Care Act on our part-time workforce.
Okay. Good morning. So the first slide that I have to talk to you today about in terms of the Affordable Care Act is the requirements. There are two requirements that we're going to be talking about today. The first requirement is employers must offer employee health benefits that provide minimum essential coverage to 70% of full-time employees in 2015 and 95% in 2016 and later. This requirement is often referred to as the pay or play provision. The next requirement is to provide affordable health benefits to employees who work on average 30 hours per week. This requirement is called the shared responsibility provision. So for employers that fail to meet these two requirements, there are penalties that are levied against them. The first penalty for the pay or play provision is $2,000 per FTE or full-time equivalent minus the first 80 FTEs. This penalty is applied to all employees regardless if they are offered benefits or not. The county currently complies with this provision is expected to be in compliance in 2015 and beyond. The shared responsibility penalty is $3,000 per qualified employee who is not offered affordable health benefits through the county and enrolls in a subsidized exchange coverage through Covered California. So this particular penalty is only applied for those employees that actually go to the healthcare exchange and get a subsidy. So the county currently has approximately 50 part-time employees and personal service contract employees who work on average 30 hours or more per week. These employees are not eligible for regular county health insurance benefits due to their part-time employment status, but they would be eligible for benefits based on the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. So based on existing numbers, The pay-or-play penalty would trigger at approximately 1,100 employees in 2015 and 190 employees in 2016. This penalty would result in approximate $7.3 million if it was to come due. Again, as Jody mentioned, the county currently provides health care benefits to all full-time employees. So really the group that we're talking about or focused on is part-time employees, and there are approximately 570 part-time employees. The county will take steps to ensure compliance through internal compliance procedures to ensure that these part-time employees do not impact this penalty. The shared responsibility penalty. If any of these employees enroll in the subsidized Covered California plan, as previously mentioned, the county will pay approximately $3,000 each annually. It is estimated that less than 11 of these employees out of the 50 would use Covered California for health care benefits at an approximate cost of $18,000 to $33,000 annually to the county. In contrast, it is estimated that less than 15 employees would participate in a county medical plan if it was offered through the county, with an estimated cost of $25,000 to $50,000 annually.
Paul, I'm sorry to interrupt you here. I don't want to throw you off here. Could you go back to the $7 million again? I totally wasn't following
when
we got to that.
So with the pay-or-play penalty, If that penalty was to come due, the county would be charged $2,000 per eligible employee, per full-time employee, for each employee, regardless if those employees are offered health care benefits. So if that penalty comes due, that would result in about a $7.3 million penalty.
Okay, I think I missed the word if. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, okay, so, and what happened for us, for the us to experience that, Supervisor Withrow, is in this coming year, we would have to no longer offer benefits to approximately 1,100 employees. Then we would be hit with that penalty. In the future, in 2016, the 2015 is a ramp-up year for compliance with the law. You can have 30%, you can be 30% out of compliance. In 2016, you can only be 5% out of compliance, which gives you some cushion room. And so in 2016, we can only have approximately 190 employees not offered health care without triggering that penalty. What Paul's presenting is right now we have about 50.
But this 30 hours is the...
Yeah, 30 hours.
But under 30 hours.
Correct.
Is not...
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Do we see if we can get back to where you were?
So the county is faced with two options. The first option is to utilize the health care exchange to provide benefit enrollment for qualifying part-time employees at a maximum cost of $3,000 each annually, or implement a new part-time health program administered by the county. Staff's recommendation is to use the health care exchange to provide benefit enrollment for qualifying part-time employees. The reasons for this recommendation is for more enrollment options available to eligible employees through the Cover California, and some employees will qualify for subsidies on the exchange that would not be available to the county through a county administered plan. And finally, reduced overall costs for employees and the county. As previously mentioned, less than 15 employees would enroll in a county plan. So the next slide really focuses on the pay or play penalty. And as previously mentioned, this is a lot of money that we're talking about that could impact the county. So moving forward, ongoing compliance with the Affordable Care Act, especially in particular this provision, will require strong oversight of part-time work hours by county departments and the CEO office. Departments will be required to request additional approval from the CEO prior to working part-time employees 30 or more hours per week. If approved, departments will be required to budget $3,000 annually for potential benefit costs and continually monitor these employees' work hours on an ongoing basis. Employee benefit staff will routinely track all department part-time work hours to ensure overall compliance as an organization within the measurement period from November 1st to October 31st of each year. Simply put, county staff will ensure there is no scenario which places the organization at risk for the new pay-or-play penalty. Recommendations. The first recommendation is to approve the recommended health insurance rates as provided in Attachment A to be charged in the Employee Medical, Dental, and Vision Self-Insurance Program for calendar year 2015. Second recommendation is to authorize the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer, to take all necessary action to ensure compliance with the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, including but not limited to requiring additional approvals from departments to use part-time employees and establishing additional reporting safeguards at department and CEO level to monitor part-time positions and hours worked. Next, establish the initial measurement period of calculating average hours worked to be June 1, 2014 through November 30, 2014 for 6 months, and establish the standard measurement period on an ongoing basis to be November 1st through October 31st of each year for 12 months. The third recommendation is to approve staff's recommendation to utilize the health care exchange option to provide benefits for qualifying part-time employees who work on average 30 or more hours per week.
Thank you, Paul. That completes our presentation and recommendations. Oh, I'm not sure how we slipped that in there. Sorry. Yeah. Paul's actually a Padre fan. I'm not sure how he snuck that in there, but he's coming around. He got to the local area soon. We'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have related to our recommendations, and it's a lot of material, so please feel free to ask any questions.
If you want the keys,
thank you. What about how are people affected if you're on Medicare? You retired, and they wanted to come back to work part-time, and they have insurance available to them. How does that affect us?
So if you're eligible for Medicare, then you would not result in a penalty against the organization based on your Medicare eligibility. This is limited to those individuals who are not eligible for Medicare. For those full-time employees who are age 65 or over, they can maintain their enrollment on the county's health insurance program. You are not forced to go on the medical Medicare. However, if you are no longer working for the county, you are not eligible to enroll in the county's medical insurance program at age 65 or above based on your Medicare eligibility.
Okay. My one thought, as we've been talking about this for quite some time, and it's good for everyone to hear it, the county does offer, by and large, to the vast majority of our employees, a very healthy benefit on the medical side, so much so that we have to watch out that we don't end up in the Cadillac tax in the years coming forward. But I would venture a guess to say this is going to hurt employment at the county. You're going to employ fewer people because of this penalty. And that's an editorial comment. It may help some folks where the benefit is not offered, but as far as county employment, we're going to have to be so cautious that we don't slip up and miss because the penalty is too great. So I would expect us to actually do the opposite and not employ as many people as we probably would have on a part-time basis.
Supervisor Monteith.
I have a question. Those who participate in our medical program, have we ever had participants or currently have participants that are not county employees?
Yes, it's that very first pie chart.
Other than retirement.
Let me explain that. That very first pie chart that we showed, you can see 1% of our enrollment is through special districts. So we allow access to the program for local special districts who in the past otherwise didn't have some ability to purchase group health insurance programs. We've been working with those special districts to transition them to a new program that's available throughout the state that was designed specifically for special districts. So these are like small cemetery districts and so forth. So it's approximately 20 to 30 individuals that are on the county's medical insurance program through special districts.
That will no longer be on.
Yeah, as of January of next year, they're transitioning off. There may be some scenarios where one or two of them may stay on the plan for the 2015 plan year, but they are all aware that they will need to transition.
Okay, they all have that same period of transition, 1 year?
Correct.
Okay, the reason I asked, someone called me. And they were concerned that they were at this point they weren't going to be able to continue, and so I just wanted to verify.
Yeah, we actually we sat down and met with each one of them individually and showed them their options, and
yes,
the other program alternatives would actually save them money to go to another program option through this. There's a statewide consortium of
programs. So after 1 year, that will no longer be.
Yeah, we've actually encouraged them to transition by January of 2015, but we recognize...
Is that required by law, or is that our...
No, that was something that we had worked with within the county organization here to decide.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I'd just add that there may be a special district that, due to their workforce, they may have a difficulty initially finding health care. And so we're working closely with those special districts to ensure that they are able to meet that deadline.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the board? Anyone in the audience wish to comment on this agenda item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board.
Motion to approve.
The motion has been made to approve the... three staff recommendations. Is there a second?
I will second that.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion is carried 5-0.
Thanks,
Chairman DeMartini. I'd like to take just a moment to recognize and thank Jody Hayes and Paul and their team. This was a significant effort on their part on top of all the labor negotiations that are going on. And I think they did an excellent job in helping shepherd this through the process. So I just wanted to express my thanks for your work on this.
Thank you very much, Dan. As a reminder, open enrollment will start later this afternoon based on your approval today. Everybody, please get your flu shot. Please, they are free, available at our open enrollment location. So get your free flu shot. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Hayes. We will now move to agenda item B8.
Mr. Risen?
All right. Thank you, Chairman DeMartini and members of the board, Mr. Doring. We're excited to present to you this morning our preliminary plans for a Stanislaus County focus on prevention in 2015. The seeds of this emphasis actually began several years ago, and it really has its roots in your board priorities, especially of the safe community and a healthy community. But I remember not long after Supervisor Withrow came on the board, staff had brought an agenda item to you as a board. And I remember, Jerry, you having to comment, and it really resonated with us. It was something like, doggone it, I wish we could spend money on addressing the root causes rather than just treating symptoms all the time. And like I said, that really kind of resonated with staff. Then a number of years ago, a couple community members on their own expense brought in a gentleman from LaRed who talked about the fact that if you're really going to see community transformation, it has to involve all sectors of your community, and the community has to help drive the solution. Our Behavioral Health and Recovery Services Department has been kind of a leader in a lot of these areas as far as community involvement and stakeholder participation for quite some time. And earlier in the year, our department heads were together, and we were talking about the fact that one of our key community issues is early intervention and prevention-type activities. And so as we considered all that, we decided that prevention ought to really start becoming more of a focus, not only with our organization, but throughout our entire community. And as you'll remember, as part of the final adopted budget, you approved $1 million that you set aside to go towards prevention activities. And then on September 30th, Supervisor Withrow asked staff to come back with a plan and a proposal about how we would pursue this prevention focus. And so that's kind of what we're here to talk to you about this morning. And we're pretty excited about where this is going to lead us and go. As I said, our prevention programs go back decades with services offered by the county and local agencies. And I have to say that there are a lot of good people doing a lot of good things out there right now. And that shouldn't be overlooked and can't be overlooked. And they are making a good impact. So the question is, I guess, why are we here today? Well, we think we need to hype up the amount of collaboration and singular focus and community involvement when it comes to our prevention focus and activities. And I'll just share one example. When it comes to the area of homelessness, for example, as we've began looking into this area and studying it, we realize there are excellent groups like the Continuum of Care that probably have over 40 different individual groups or programs involved in the Continuum of Care for homeless housing. And at the same time, we, under the leadership of Kevin Carroll with the Modesto Gospel Mission, there is a homeless coalition that meets that probably has 15 to 20 groups that are actively participating in that involvement. Yet at the same time, when you look at statistics, the California Homeless Youth Project reported that in 2011, 3% of students in our Stanislaus County were homeless. In 2013, that number had almost doubled to 5.6%. And I think it illustrates the fact that well, a lot of good people are doing a lot of good things and having a lot of good impacts. We're not getting the overall impact and progress in making a dent on some of these issues that we need to make. And so our goal is to be a facilitator, a convener that brings brings everyone together to the same table to try to have a common set of objectives and solutions in tackling these issues. And in sharing this vision with people, I shared the analogy that my wife and I were out on Pinecrest Lake a couple months ago, and we were in a kayak, and we decided we wanted to go to the other side of the lake. And so we started rowing, but I noticed our kayak kept going in a zigzag fashion. And finally, my wife said, where are you trying to steer us to? And I said, well, I'm headed to that rock over there. And she said, well, I was headed to that beach over there. We were both going to the other side of the lake, but because we had not clearly communicated a common objective and goal of exactly where we wanted to go on the other side of the lake, we weren't necessarily working against each other, but we weren't as efficient as we could be. And so part of the focus that we want to get here is that the government, a couple-fold, government's not going to be the answer here. In fact, I can share with you, and I'm not going to because of time, I can share with you examples where sometimes we get in the way. I could also share with you examples where a lot of good people doing a lot of good things are sometimes tripping over each other or even working against each other because of the lack of communication and collaboration. And so our goal is to be that of a convener, to bring all the different pillars of society together, of our community, and see if we can come up with one clear objective of where it is we want to go on the other side of the lake and how to get there. And so that's a little bit about what we want to share with you this morning. I'm pleased at the staff table to have Patrice Dietrich, who, on top of all our responsibilities in leading our budget, I've asked her to be our prevention coordinator. And joining her also is Patrick Kavanaugh, and Patrick prepared the PowerPoint for you this morning and is going to assist in the presentation. So at this point, I'll turn it over to you, Patrick.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman DeMartini, members of the board, Mr. Risen, Mr. Doring. In order to make a difference, the proposed Focus on Prevention 2015 will begin a community transformation process in four areas critical to the quality of life in Stanislaus County. Homelessness, the strengthening of families, youth early intervention, and reducing recidivism. The actual process is envisioned to include participants from all sectors of society working and rowing together with a willingness to break down existing silos and work towards common goals and objectives. It is important that we stay clear to our vision in this process, which is that government is not the answer. The issues that challenge our community are bigger than any one sector of the county can solve alone. While the county cannot provide one easy solution to these community challenges, we can absolutely be the facilitator or convener to bring all sectors of the community together to mobilize the passion and energy that exists towards our common goal of a safe and healthy community. We envision that champions will be identified in each sector to join government, the county, and the cities in the Focus of Prevention 2015. These sectors are listed on the slide and include education, faith-based, arts, media, government, nonprofits, business, entertainment and sports, and neighborhoods. And supporting that effort, listening to the community and working in partnership, government can provide assistance and a framework for transformation change. This is a visual aid to demonstrate the Focus of Prevention 2015 plan of action. At the top, representatives from each sector will come together through a convening process led by Stanislaus County. Convenings will focus on root causes and strategies to address homelessness, the strengthening of families, youth early intervention, and reducing recidivism to improve the quality of life. These strategies will be prevention-focused and not just aimed at treating symptoms. The goal is to transform services to achieve a new normal in which performance outcomes demonstrate improvement and success and visible to in the community. In this new normal, resources will be directed to services demonstrating positive return on investment. Community transformation takes time. The Focus on Prevention will begin in 2015 and roll out three phases beginning in January. First phase, Phase 1, establishes sponsor organizations from all sectors of the community. Phase 2 includes support for self-directed stakeholder groups to develop solutions to community issues. Again, government is not the answer, so this phase is key to the plan in which community steps forward to identify how best to treat the root causes of the issues, preventing us from attaining the quality of life we all desire for our community. In phase three, there will be recommendations to the board to award mini grants for prevention activities. We recognize that investing in preventative programs and activities may not yield immediate results, but will result in better long-term outcomes. Ms. Beatrick will now discuss these phases in more detail.
Thank you. Phase one will actually begin with establishing sponsor organizations from all sectors of the community, and we will ask them to adopt the theme of Prevention 2015 for their organization. This will allow them and encourage them to discuss programs, activities, and gatherings to address the root causes of the challenges that are facing our community. These sponsor organizations will agree to participate in four community convenings, one for each of the chosen quality of life issues that we've identified. Sponsors will encourage and support participation throughout the county. At each convening, we will have a subject matter expert speaker and facilitate a group interaction to establish common understanding of each issue. Sponsors will be inclusive of consumers and customer input to identify needs, root causes, best practices, and new ideas for strategies, specifically community solutions. Phase one will culminate with the convening, which are planned to occur approximately 6 months apart. The phases will cascade, so beginning in spring of 2015, and the last actually occurring in the winter of 2016. As we're embarking on this journey, we're wanting to establish a plan. We're also wanting that plan to remain fluid to allow for community input, which may shape the process of transformation. Phase two will be support for self-directed stakeholder groups. We envision this phase will last about 4 to 6 months and occur immediately after each convening. The county role here will be to support the stakeholder groups and the potential for our community sponsors to assist with training, technical assistance, identification of best practices, and the development of new service strategies. While that self-directed stakeholder process is ongoing, the county will be working internally to develop a mini-grant process that would be implemented moving into the next phase. These mini-grants would be targeted to the self-directed stakeholder groups. These prevention proposals must include representation from all sectors of the community. The self-directed stakeholder groups would apply for support with all sectors represented in the proposal, and the grants would require reporting of outcomes. In phase three, we would bring recommendations to your board to award mini grants, service periods of approximately 12 to 18 months. The awards are, again, specific to our community issues and, again, with all sectors of the community involved in the service model. Evaluation of outcomes will support targeted investment in future years with an assured return on investment. And as I say that, we understand that outcomes in the short term may be difficult to quantify. However, we are confident that we can look to progress in each phase that would lead to sustained improvement and yield a return on investment over the long term. The estimated total cost to begin the focus on prevention is approximately $110,000. Included within this projection is $60,000 for prevention community liaison support, website development, in addition, $50,000 to support the first convening targeted in spring of 2015. And again, these are rough estimates as we begin our journey going forward. We anticipate that would cover facility cost, supplies, speaker, and a facilitator to support the group. We'll make every effort to involve sponsor organizations as well as to make use of donations to defray costs. The budget for Focus on Prevention can be funded with a transfer from appropriations for contingencies, the prevention funds that were already established by this board. The first convening, as we've mentioned, is targeted for spring of 2015. The focus will be on homelessness. There's a lot of support and effort and attention on this issue already in our community. We're anticipating over 300 participants. We'll focus on an opportunity for networking across all sectors to focus on broad systems issues and to be sure that we're all looking at the same root causes and establishing common definitions. We anticipate that our registration process will provide an opportunity for us to gather data and funding information on current programs and services, which we can share in the convenings and use to help inform our process going forward. And facilitated group interaction will allow the stakeholders to connect, and we hope commit towards working together going forward. Expected outcome is improved service performance and an overall improved quality of life in our community. The focus on prevention is a new normal in which funding for programs and services with prevention as a focus integral to the service model and county programs and performance measures that will be available to guide resource decisions in the future. So that's the plan as it exists today, and we thought we'd close with a quote from Vince Lombardi. Individual commitment to a group effort, that is what makes a team work, a company work, a society work, a civilization work. And with your approval this morning, we would like to go forward and partner with the community to work on improved quality of life in our county. The staff recommendations are on the screen before you. Number one, approve the Stanislaus County Focus on Prevention 2015 to establish the county and the chief executive officer as a facilitator and convener of partners from all sectors of the community to address key issues affecting our quality of life. Number two, authorize the chief executive officer to engage the community in planning and conducting a series of four community convening conferences, beginning with spring 2015 gathering focused on homelessness. Number three, authorize the use of $110,000 in appropriations for contingencies by 4/5 vote of this Board of Supervisors. And number four, direct the auditor controller to make the necessary adjustments to the Chief Executive Office Operations and Services budget as detailed in the budget journal attached to your item. And with that, if there are any questions, we are available.
Any questions or comments from the board? Supervisor Withrow.
Just a couple things here. I'm really excited about this. I think this is something that has some great potential here. As we've said several times throughout this presentation, that government is not the answer, and this isn't something that government, a problem government can solve. And actually, I think government has probably enabled it over the years to some extent. It's not something that we're going to throw money at just to try to achieve these goals. That's not going to work. It's going to require the community. And we have a great community. We have an unbelievable community here in Stanislaus County. And you just look at all the people that get involved in things and the leaders that have come from this community and gone on. We have great people here that can do great things. I think, unfortunately, over the years, what's happened a lot with government kind of getting involved in as far as raising the family and taking care of kids, I think we have all kind of backed away and just let government kind of take over and let, thinking that government was going to handle that now. And that we don't have to get involved. It used to be that the community was involved when there were families and children that needed help. The community would get involved, and now we just kind of step back and, well, government will help them with the various assistance programs. And it doesn't work. And something that Supervisor Monteef says that I've used a lot lately that I hear is government can't give you a hug. And that's just kind of the bottom line of the whole thing. Government can't solve this problem. So what we're going to ask for is for people's time. And I know we've got a lot of good people out there that are doing a lot of good things. And we just need to, what we're going to try to do here, I hope, is to try to organize and help bring these collaborations together and get everybody on the same page on these things. And I just think that there's great potential for what we can do here. We're going to have to, so a lot of organizations, we're not looking to tread on anybody's soil, to take away anybody's autonomy as far as their different things that they're doing. We just want to get them all working together to accomplish the same common goal to make this a better place and to bring up our children, to help with our homeless issues that that isn't happening right now. And this really can be a game changer. And it's not going to be something that that will happen overnight. It's not going to be what we so much always look for, instant results. You know, it's a long-term thing. But I tell you, you give us 10 years and we can change a community if we can get involved in a kid's life at 6. And by the time they're 16, 17, 18, then it's not if they're going to college, it's where they're going to college or tech prep school or whatever it might be. And then we've got this community that, that people want to come to. We're always, sorry, I'm going to expand on this thing. We're always looking to try to bring businesses into our community. And we're always chasing after these latest things. And instead, we need to look at the assets that we have right now, and that's our children, and we need to grow from within. And then we'll turn this into a place that people can't wait to be and that won't want to leave, but will want to stay here. So big goals that I'm throwing out here that I think this, but I think there's all kinds of potential here for us to do with this, and I'm really excited about this.
So are we.
Supervisor Chiesa.
Again, great idea. We've been talking about this for a long time. I have a suggestion. There was a book written by our former congressman, George Radonovich, and it was called The New World Order is the Old World Order. And it kind of talks about his time in government and sometimes being a hindrance to progress, and government is not the solution. And it's a little bit about self-responsibility and the hug. That is a perfect, perfect thought. Can't give him a hug. And I would suggest that we invite him to talk on this subject at the meeting because it talks about self-responsibility. Government is here to help people who can't help themselves, and we've kind of crossed the line helping people who can't help themselves, and we have to be careful about where we tread on that. But I think it's a great idea. Well, let's expand on this, be conveners. I think this is a great idea. This is just what we're talking about in the Prop 10. Perfect day to present on Prop 10 because that's what it's about. It's about early intervention with these folks, and Terry, you're right, we can change, but it will take nearly a generation, which is only about 10 years in kids' time, because we need to mold their minds early. So great job, Stan, on this, staff. I think this is a great direction.
Yeah, I think this program has the potential to really improve our community. You know, government involvement in the past has just led to dependence on the government, as Supervisor Withrow said, and so a lot of times we're helping people that should be helping themselves or really not paying attention to or working with community groups that have a different approach. And generally what government's done through social services is just throw money at programs and just has no realistic outcomes except just continued dependence, and we've replaced opportunity with dependence in many of the things we do. I think it's time for a new approach on this in early intervention, working with community groups, and not just on the issue of homelessness, but on fatherless households too, which is, I think, could have a tremendous impact if we focus on that area too, or for children and young adults. So I think it's time for something new. What we've been doing, I've never been satisfied with, and we spend a lot of money at it, but we don't get the results. So let's try a new program. I think this is really Mr. Risen's project, and I just really commend him a lot on tackling this and looking for a new approach to improve the community. We're not going to see improvements immediately, but I think long-term, I think this has a tremendous potential.
I'd like to commend Supervisor Withrow and CEO staff for this. We spend all of our money on the Band-Aids rather than ever getting down to the root cause. And even if we have limited success in this program, the community is going to be so further ahead. It'd be a great victory. So a lot of work ahead, a lot of hard work, and a lot of time that it's going to take. But I think it's well worth the effort.
Supervisor Monteith.
Many times people look at a program like this where we speak of possibly 10 years, and they say 10 years, that's a long time. I merely want to mention that if you do it now, 10 years from now, we won't have to say the same thing, and that's what you keep in mind.
Yeah, I have one speaker card, Vernon Lee Price.
I want to thank you, every last one today, for this focus. I didn't really know how deep it was until I sat here and listened with it. So if I get a little enthusiastic this morning, please forgive me. I'm from a Pentecostal background, so we get a little excited. I'm with Supervisor Terry Withrow. You know, as the business, potential businesses coming into this community sees a stronger independent person, a stronger family, and less reliance on a system, they will stay. I'm behind you 100% with the enthusiasticness. I come to you today, though, from a consumer's aspect. When you say that there is going to be training, stuff of that nature, I do understand that the BHRS providers needs to be trained in a certain atmosphere. But is there opportunity today for the consumer to be trained to show the next consumer coming up behind us that you can go through this to the other side, that's the brighter side of things, instead of going back to a relapse of a hurt, habit, hang-up, and addiction? Because that a government cannot give us a hug, but I can say today, gentlemen, that we can hug one another and say that we can go through this stronger on the other side, because we will have to reach out and take another person's hand, that we can make this a better place. And sometimes we may need to lean on one another, because tomorrow I may need to lean on somebody here in Stanislaus. I want to say today to a lady that I'm looking at right now, thank her for being my mentor, that I may sometimes shoot myself in the foot. Thank you for that time in your office. It's something I didn't like her right then, but it's something I needed and something I accepted. So, you know, I, as a consumer this morning, I enthusiastically say, you know, we can do this. And there is hope in this. So, Mr. Risen, Mr. CEO, thank you so much for bringing this to the table, because I know that took a lot of heart and a lot of searching. And I thank you for allowing your heart to lead you, because I can feel it, that this isn't money. This is that matters. This is people that matter. And I want to thank you so much. If there's anything, you know, as I say, is there some training for the consumers? If that can be answered. Because, I mean, trauma-informed care is something that really is necessary, because there is trauma out on the streets, ladies and gentlemen. I went to a two-day conference last year here with the county, and it was on trauma-informed care. And we really need, if we're going to really touch those that are chronically homeless, because we have some that are very feral, you know, as a feral animal, they even fray from themselves. You've got feral people that are chronically homeless that are afraid to even approach their own, more or less, a provider. So if a consumer, you know, that has been chronically homeless or is chronically homeless with some training, that can go out with some field workers, you'll find that there's a better reception on the riverbed in behind the bushes. Instead of someone running from you, they'll run to you, because there's that consumer that they know, that homeless person that they know, or that former homeless person that they recognize. There is a camaraderie. So please take that into consideration, and I do apologize for taking so much time or being, you know, a little abrasive or being enthusiastic, but thank you so much for your time to approach this morning. If there's any questions or comments, I do want to say thank you so much, Director Dr. Madeline, for being a part of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Mr. Risen.
Yeah, if I could just suggest a couple things. First of all, we definitely plan on involving consumers and those with life experiences in the convenings and helping to craft the solutions. The specific training and facilitation that was mentioned in the presentation is more aimed at helping guide the stakeholder groups to the developed solutions. And so that's what we were referencing in our presentation.
The goal of this would be to keep people from becoming homeless in the first place.
Absolutely.
By early intervention. We have many programs that deal with them after they're homeless, but there is no program that I'm aware of that tries to prevent people from being homeless. That's the new focus of this. Okay, we have four recommendations before us. I remind the board that this requires a 4/5 vote.
I would like to make a motion that we approve all four staff recommendations.
Okay, is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion is carried unanimously, 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay, we have no scheduled matters today. We will now move to correspondence.
This board has received the annual report for the San Jose County Law Library for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2014.
Acknowledge receipt of report.
This board has received a notice for the Worker Adjustment Retraining and Notification Act from Ohm Spices and Vegetables regarding the permanent layoff of 173 employees beginning on December 19, 2014 from their facility located on 1705 East Whitmore Avenue in Modesto, California.
Refer to the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance and the Alliance Network.
This board has received a notice per the Worker Adjustment Retraining and Notification Act from American Medical Response regarding the permanent layoff of most of their employees beginning on December 31st, 2014 and a second group on March 2nd, 2015 at the facility located at 4701 Stoddard Road, Modesto.
Refer to the Stanislaus Economic Development Workforce Alliance and the Alliance WorkNet.
This board has received a letter from the San Joaquin County Superintendent of Schools regarding the annual review of the John B. Allard Community School, Sears Community School, and Empire Community School per the Williams Settlement Regulations.
Refer to the Stanislaus County Superintendent of Schools.
This board has received the claims as noticed on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? Legislative and Fiscal Management Report, Mr. Risen?
No report this morning.
Okay, we will now adjourn to closed session. Mr. Doring.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have conference with labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The agency negotiators are Stan Risen, Nancy Bronstein, and Jody Hayes. The labor organizations are those listed on the agenda, and we do not expect any report out, and it would be appropriate to ask if there are any public comments on these closed session matters.
Okay, seeing none, this meeting stands adjourned.